We're focusing on getting more women educated to be the folks out on the streets teaching folks to ride.
Well, that's my guest today. That's Carolyn Schepansky. She's the communications director for the League of American Bicyclists in Washington, D.C. Carolyn and I, we have a common interest. It's women on bicycles. And she reached out to me a few weeks ago to talk about that. She's coming to Southern California again. Well, we talk about all of this during the show. You're going to really enjoy getting to know Carolyn here on CDM Cyclist, where I'm your host, Frank Peters. Thanks so much for joining me once again. I enjoy these audio interviews. I hope you do too. And come by the website to register your reactions, please, at cdmcyclist.com. Carolyn, we talk about so many things. The National Summit coming up in March. The first ever Women's Bicycle Summit in Long Beach in September. Editorial opinions about common themes in bicycle magazines. I think you're going to enjoy listening. Carolyn's so easy to talk to. Well, let's get right to it. Carolyn, you're a communications guru. You're with the League of American Bicyclists in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Now, Carolyn, this is the first time we've met, I guess.
Yeah, and I've heard your name through the Alliance and have heard some of your podcasts related to bicycling, both on the advocacy side, you know, Stephanie and the Social Bicycles show
Stephanie
that you did.
Noel at,
a little while ago.
BTA, you're speaking of.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody loves cool. Stephanie, huh?
Yeah.
Since
she's amazing.
I got a lot of nice feedback on that. And we did cross paths, though, but in Long Beach in September.
Yeah, I don't think we actually, we didn't get a chance to meet, but we were both there for all the great programming around Pro Walk Pro Bike and the Alliance Leadership Retreat. And of course, you know, what I was mostly involved in being the National Women's Bicycling Summit. So lots of good stuff going on in Long Beach.
Oh, Carolyn, before we go any further, I need help pronouncing your last name.
Yeah, it's Schepansky.
Schepansky.
Yeah, it sounds like an SH, but my Polish heritage likes the consecutive consonants that kind of get things a little complicated.
I've been to Warsaw just a year ago.
Oh, nice. Yeah, we're from Krakow, so we go back to Krakow fairly frequently. We still have family there. But I've been to Warsaw a couple of times. It's an interesting city with all the reconstruction that happened after the war. Lots of really, really intense history there for sure.
Yeah, I was there. They hosted a big angel investor conference, really keen on building their entrepreneurial economy there.
Yeah.
But today we're talking about bicycles. And you sent me an email regarding, well, back in Long Beach, you hosted the Women's Bike Summit, National Women's Bike Summit. So there's an emphasis on women and bicycles. Why do women get a special call out when it comes to bicycle advocacy, Carolyn?
Well, we have been seeing such tremendous growth in bicycling, which I'm sure you've seen. But even though the kind of the ranks of bicyclists nationwide are growing really rapidly, we're not seeing the growth in women riding keeping pace. There was a study that John Pucher did, I think last year, that showed that, you know, in the early 2000s, women represented about 33% of the overall bicycle mode share in the United States. And fast forward to 2009, like I said, we've seen this explosion in interest in bicycling. But the number of women who are adopting isn't keeping pace. So in 2009, that number had dropped to 24% from 23% earlier in the 2000s. Yeah, so it's not that fewer women are riding. We're definitely seeing a growth in the number of women riding, but the adoption rate isn't as high among women as it is among men. So you know, we've been doing a lot of work around bicycle advocacy generally, trying to get more folks to ride. But you know, just from the numbers themselves, we see that maybe there's some different techniques or some special attention that we need to be paying to this particular issue. Because, you know, we see in countries like the Netherlands and countries like Germany, you see almost a 50-50 split. And in some countries, you actually see more women riding than men. And what we want to do is figure out ways that we can get towards that here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just for fun.
Well, here's where I pause for a second, and I ask Carolyn, you can hear that scratch in her, headset microphone? Well, I hear it, and I thought the recording might be a little better.
Okay. Tell me, where did you go to high school, Carolyn?
So let's give it a try.
I went to high school, actually, in Houston, Texas. Well, I went to half of my high school was in Houston, Texas. Before that, I was actually in Switzerland at an international school there. So very, in terms of transportation, two very distinct worlds. You know, in Switzerland, I rode my bike or walked or took the train everywhere and then came back to Houston, Texas, which is very car-centric and, had to get a driver's license, which originally I was like, I'm not going to get a driver's license, but can't really exist and get around Houston, Texas without a car. So
now we're just kind of spending a moment here as we play with your audio side there. And you sound better without the headphones on, so we'll go with this. But while we're on the subject of Houston, I can't resist a dig, right? Because Houston often is the target, right, for modern American cities, in part because there's no zoning codes in Houston, right?
Yeah.
And I read somewhere that Houston wouldn't exist if it weren't for air conditioning.
Oh, gosh, yeah. it's a very unique place. And I think that a lot of, it's such a heat sink, too, because so much of Houston is a parking lot that it's in, which probably has to do something with zoning, but yeah, it's an interesting place. I mean, there is more energy around bike advocacy, certainly, coming to fore now. So there's hope for Houston, but in my years there, for sure,
I've met bicycle advocates from Houston and they're ready to be needled. They take it very well, and then they'll tell you just how hard they're working. So good luck, Houston. Okay, very good. Okay, so back to women on bicycles. Yeah. So we've got a mutual friend in Long Beach, in Melissa Ballmer.
Yeah,
she's
definitely.
She's doing a lot of work to promote women on bicycles. What's your opinion?
Well, one of the things that really solidified our idea to do the National Women's Bicycling Summit in Long Beach was the work that Melissa was doing, knowing that she's really kind of at the forefront of bringing this to the attention of the movement. She's really focused a lot on capitalizing on the fact that bicycling is becoming very fashionable, and capitalizing on the fact that there's kind of the cycle chic movement, which is focused a little bit more around showing women that you can be stylish, you can wear high heels, you can, go about your day-to-day activities and not really have to adopt a, quote unquote cycling attire or cycling,
wearing spandex, right?
That are kind of stereotypically associated with bicycling, but that's certainly not a mandate. It's not a requirement. So Melissa's done such a great job in making cycling accessible to women in Long Beach, largely through promoting images and promoting spokespeople who really represent who truly is out there on the streets, whether that's, Suja Lowenthal, who's on the city council there, the vice mayor, and also promoting the fact that you don't have to be a hardcore cyclist to adopt some aspect of a cycling lifestyle. You can ride your bike a couple of times a week to get to the store. You don't have to be riding every single day of the year for all your transportation needs. Like I think some women might think that and hold that as a barrier. So Melissa's done a great, great job.
Mm-hmm. There is a lot of pressure on this while we're on the subject of attire, right? I have three sisters, so I'm an expert. But I just got back on my bicycle a few years ago, and I felt tremendous, what would you call it? Peer pressure to ride with the big boys and squeeze into those spandex outfits and then clip in with the shoes. I bought all kinds of shoes and pedals, and then I realized, I guess, that where I am in my life, that didn't matter. I wanted to be able to just jump on my bike at any time of day or night to go do something and not stand in the garage saying, geez, what shoes am I going to wear? Or I left my shoes upstairs, or I don't have my, you know, whatever it was that I needed to wear to ride. So I went through that too.
Yeah. And I'm like that as well. You know, I think I own one pair of spandex shorts that I, you know, when I did the climate ride, for instance, I busted those out. But on a day-to-day basis, I wear exactly what I would wear otherwise, and I ride a bike for basically all my transportation needs. And, you know, I don't have a fancy bike. I actually have a milk crate on the back of my bike to carry things around. So,
oh, those are pretty cool, though, Carolyn. Let's pause for a second. That's pretty cachet.
Yeah, maybe that's a little bit hipster of me. But, you know, definitely you can – there's definitely a change in the perception of bicycling that you don't have to have fancy shoes. You don't have to have a fancy bike. And, you know, a bicycle can be such a great amenity in terms of mobility options, in terms of just, you know, heading out to the store and not having to worry about getting in a car and finding a parking space and things like that. So I think that paradigm is really starting to shift.
Now, padded shorts, and then we'll leave this subject of padded shorts, though. You can still squeeze on a pair of padded shorts, and there are many rides where you'll be glad you have them, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. Okay, so I saw in your bio that you write for Momentum Magazine from time to time. And Momentum Magazine, out of Vancouver, right? They're just loaded with fantastic images. It's like the total opposite of so many bike publications, isn't it? It's about lifestyle.
Yeah. And yeah, that's one of the things that, and I think that Momentum has been really critical in encouraging more women to ride by presenting those images. You know, if you, I love Bicycling Magazine. I would never say anything ill of them, but you know, if you pick up a Bicycling Magazine, I think that a lot of women don't feel like that's representing us in a lot of ways, but you pick up Momentum and there's a wealth of images of women of, you know, different ethnicities, different sizes, different ages. And that's really something that is promoting bicycling to an audience that in some of the more traditional media has been not necessarily left out, but hasn't been as marketed to specifically
You don't feel as you're not part of the team, so to speak. Well, when I pick up, it's not even gender specific, Carolyn. When I pick up some of these magazines and flip through them, I see, you know, how your diet for to prepare for your next century and, you know, that kind of emphasis on basically racing that I got sucked into, too. And I'm just not, you know, it's taken me a long time to figure out, I say, what kind of a cyclist I am. And then I saw the term just a little while ago, too, of a utility cyclist. I would be a commuter, except, you know, I'm kind of retired, so I don't have I need a job so I could classify myself as a commuter cyclist. But anyway, Momentum's good for that. So is Bicycle Times magazine, while we're talking about favorite magazines, and you write for them too.
Yes, I do. And they're also representative of, like you just said, the utilitarian cyclists. And you know, Karen Brooks is the editor there, and she's done amazing work around making sure that women's voices are included. And she's actually on the board of Bike Pittsburgh and really involved in advocacy there. But one of the things that Mia said, Mia Kohut, who's the, you know, the publisher of Momentum, is that a lot of folks aren't recognizing that a lot of women are coming into the movement as commuters, as utilitarian cyclists, as opposed to kind of this focus on racing. Not that there isn't a huge community of women who are racing, but being a little bit more conscious of that kind of utility aspect in terms of marketing to women, whether that's in the media, whether that's, you know, among the major bicycle manufacturers themselves and how they're marketing bicycles. That's a really important point and something that Bicycle Times does really well. And that's kind of their niche is serving the folks like me who are really, trying to incorporate bicycling into our day-to-day lives, as opposed to necessarily, you know, I'll go out on the weekend and do a century ride, but I'm not necessarily the kind of person who's too focused on, you know, a diet for racing potential.
Carolyn, change gears for a second, more somber. We had right after the leadership conference, like days later, two women fatalities in 24 hours here in Newport Beach. It has shaken the entire community. And I've talked to some of my friends, and it's just one aspect worth reflecting on maybe is the fact that it was two women really touched a wide swath of bicycling public. And we had have continued to. We just had the memorial ride last Sunday, and the turnout was three times what we expected.
Wow.
So
yeah, there's definitely a focus on safety, especially among women. You know, that's something that is particularly prominent in the minds of women is, am I going to be safe out there? And when you have these incredible tragedies like you guys had in Newport Beach, it certainly brings attention to that. And, you know, one thing we're doing here at the League is we have a new website and program called Every Bicyclist Counts. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to do more in collating data and getting more information on what specifically is causing these types of these tragedies. Because we know that it's not, you know, we use the term accident, but we know that these are not accidents. These are people's lives, and it needs to be a priority to prevent these things. And there are, you know, infrastructural design aspects that could be leading to this. There are certainly education aspects that we can be tackling as advocates in terms of keeping people safe out there. And especially in the realm of women's cycling, we're seeing that, you know, infrastructure like protected bike lanes, like, you know, traditional bike lanes, you know, things that help people feel, you know, a separation from traffic, which is something that Stephanie talked about quite a bit when she was on her on your show, that when you put in something like a protected cycle track, you see more women riding. You see a wider diversity of people from the community taking that step and becoming a bicyclist. And I think that that's, you know, both in terms of understanding the fatalities that are happening now and putting into place infrastructure that research is showing is safer, is going to be one of the key components to getting more women riding and having, you know, like I said, a wider diversity of community members taking the step that we all know is such a great, great benefit. Mm-hmm. But that first step, it might seem like, you know, something that's dangerous and something that, that might be a risky proposition.
Well, the, impact of these tragedies here locally has really, touched our elected officials too. And, we've had a bike safety committee here in Newport Beach for 3 years now, and maybe things have developed slowly, but we had, as you say, in Washington, several shovel-ready projects, and they have moved to the forefront just this week. Oh. Two nights ago, Halloween night, we painted Sharrows, you know, the Share the Lane markings, on Pacific Coast Highway, and I believe that is the first implementation of Sharrows in the state of California on Coast Highway. So,
wow, that's amazing. Since that's such a bicycle tourism route, I've actually ridden part of that myself.
Yes, and many portions of the roadway, you know, where you have a lot of parked cars and you don't have room for a bike lane, we need that. So I think that's a major step, and it demonstrates that our, you know, locally here, our elected officials are right on top of this and eager to respond.
Yeah.
While we're just nibbling around on different issues, I've been telling my friends I feel a little shell-shocked watching the news online and in print, Hurricane Sandy in New York City, all that devastation. And the part that cheers me, though, is I guess the glass half empty part is long lines of people standing in line to buy gas for their cars and the bicycles that are in the same pictures. The bicycle is really looking to be part of anybody's emergency preparedness package, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you see kind of a disruption of the traditional travel patterns like we've seen in New York and New Jersey and different places, it's really amazing to see people, you know, getting their bikes out of their garages and, you know, taking that first step to maybe rekindle a relationship with their bike.
Well, hopefully that'll stay and people will get on their bikes. I guess we've got, you know, some really tough months of winter ahead. So we've got to hope that as people are on their bikes, you know, in the next few weeks, that they'll dust them off first thing in the spring and try it again. Huh?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. and Washington, D.C. For those who haven't visited Washington, D.C. in the past couple of years, how would you describe bicycling around D.C.?
Well, D.C. has been a really great example of when you put in the infrastructure, when you make it easy for folks to ride a bike, they definitely come out in big numbers. So, you know, the first step was, we had a bike share program that started on a small level and then grew into Capital Bike Share a couple of years ago. And that has been huge. I mean, I can't ride anywhere without seeing folks on Capital Bike Share bikes. And, you know, that's been a real, it's really interesting to see the number of women, the number of professional folks who are, you know, wearing their suits and ties, who are getting on these Capital Bike Share bikes and getting around on those. So that's been huge impact to the cycling community here. And then, you know, the great work of the Washington Area Bicyclists Association and the city itself, we're part of what's called the Green Lane Project, which is being organized by the Bikes Belong Foundation in really making DC a model for some of these more innovative infrastructure components, like protected cycle tracks, like, you know, the green painted bike lanes, which a couple of weeks ago, I was so excited. I was leaving my apartment on a Sunday morning, and lo and behold, there's a street crew painting a green bike box right in front of my apartment building, which was really cool.
Wow, that's nice.
Front of, you know, some of the great infrastructure, you know, that the city's doing. You know, WABA's doing incredible work on the advocacy level. They've actually started a Women on Bikes program that was really inspirational for what we're doing at the national level. So DC is just such a great example of when you have all these different components coming together, you can see such a growth and thriving culture around bicycling.
Mm-hmm. Can we spend a minute more on bike share? Because here in Orange County, California, there's a lot of interest in bike share. And we kind of set that aside as we, you know, went straight to implementing sharrows, for example, locally. But it works in Washington, D.C. for a couple of reasons. One, it's kind of flat.
Yeah.
That helps, right? Topography matters, yeah.
Yeah, and we have such a great, you know, obviously we have a great density of destinations and, you know, a mixture of, you know, neighborhoods that have housing and grocery stores and, you know, the connectivity is really strong here in DC, which is something that's great. And, you know, even when they were debuting the system, there was buy-in from the folks in Virginia so that we had these networks that really made the connectivity really good. So people can actually get on a bike share bike and go someplace within a mile, within 2 miles, which is what really makes a bike share program very successful.
Now, 1 mile or 2 miles might not sound like much to some of my new listeners, but what it's always kicked around, Carolyn, most car trips are just a couple of miles. Too,
yeah, something right? Like 45% of trips in the United States are less than 2 miles, which is such an easily bikeable distance.
So now when I grew up in a big Irish household, and we used to embarrass each other, shame each other. So should I try that with my audience here? The next time you're in your car and you're only driving 2 miles, shame on you. You should be on your bike. Is that, that's probably not so effective, huh?
Well, I think that people, when even if they're shamed into that first trip, you know, the realization that it's so doable and it's so fun, you end up feeling so great. I mean, the conversion factor is really quick. You know, once you get someone on a bike for that one time, especially if they have a good experience with that first ride, whether it's, you know, saying, hey, will you come and ride with me? And we'll go to this destination, you know, having that, just that first experience and having it be a good experience, the conversion factor is really high. It's not a tough sell. You know, we don't have too tough of a job making people.
Well, that's true. That's true. So keep the glass half full there. So Carolyn, where do we go next with women on bicycles? What are some of your ideas? Well, how are we going to boost these numbers?
So we've got a couple of things in store for 2013. So we're launching this program called Women Bike. And, you know, one of the first components is we had such a great turnout for the National Women's Bicycling Summit, and there was so much energy. And, you know, it was an event that really garnered such a diverse crowd that we don't typically see in the past with bike events, you know, in terms of age, in terms of ethnicity, in terms of, you know, where people are in their bicycle style. Whether they're a mechanic or a commuter. So we really want to keep these face-to-face meetings going. We think there's a lot of energy in that. So we're already planning for a full-day event at the National Bike Summit called Women Mean Business. That'll be on March 4th. We've got Georgina Terry, one of the pioneers in women in the bike industry, is going to be our opening keynote. So we're really excited about continuing these face-to-face events. And then some other components that we're working on are really creating and centralizing resources on women in cycling, whether that's, having the statistics that you can take to your city council and say, hey, if we put in these, these infrastructure improvements, there are these other cities who have seen a tremendous growth in the number of women bicycling. So putting those resources in a centralized place that people can utilize in a way that will have an impact. We also really want to focus on getting more women as the face of bicycle education. At the League of American Bicyclists, we have, the League Cycling Instructor Program. So, we do a lot of the education that you see out there on the streets in terms of getting people comfortable riding, but a very small number of those folks who are the teachers are women. So we're focusing on getting more women educated to be the folks out on the streets teaching folks to ride.
I like that, Carolyn. That's a good idea, isn't it? Role models, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, very good.
So those are three other things that we're working on right now.
Now, when you mention March 4th, Carolyn, that's part of the big conference in Washington, D.C.
Yes. So the National Bike Summit this year is actually going to be really important. We just had the passage of a new federal transportation bill that went into effect in October, but we have it's only a two-year bill, so we need to start working right away to start advocating for a really good bill in 2 years from now, because the current law leaves much to be desired. It cuts bicycle and pedestrian funding, and kind of some of the programs are moved around in a way that doesn't make it a sure thing that communities are going to get access to the funding that they have in the past for biking and walking. So we're really mobilizing at this bike summit to build an agenda that will take us forward, that will build a better coalition, a more diverse coalition, bring folks to the table, and create a vision that we can take to Capitol Hill and hopefully have a new bill in very short order that is significantly better for biking and walking.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you haven't been to one of these summits, what's part of the appeal of the Bicycle Summit, Carolyn? When you went to your first one, what did you remember that was so cool about it?
Well, it's so amazing to be, first of all, just on a very basic level, be in a room with 800 other people who are passionate about bicycling, who are advocates in their own ways. You'll rub shoulders with people who are, high-ranking officials at a bicycle manufacturing company, and then at the same time you'll be sitting at a table with someone who's, the ED of a new and vibrant grassroots organization. So you have this really dynamic mix of people all in the same room. And then you're sitting there and, you have the Ray LaHood, the Secretary of Transportation for the entire country is talking about bicycling and making it, more of a priority within the federal mix. So it's just such an incredible group of people. And then feeding off of that energy, on one day we all go up to Cap Hill and we have these meetings with our members of Congress, and it's so empowering to actually realize that you have access to these people, that your voice matters, that you're sitting in a room oftentimes with the actual representative, with the actual, your U.S. senator could be in the room with you as you talk about how important bicycling is. And even more than that, you're walking around Capitol Hill and there are hundreds of people with these little, plastic bike pins. And there's just this that, we do have the power to create change even at the federal level. So it's for a lot of people, and we hear this back from people who participate, it's really transformative, and people realize how they can be politically engaged and they can make a difference. So I would so strongly urge anyone who hasn't been in the past to consider coming this year.
Okay. Well, Carolyn, it's been fun to get to know you, and I can see now just how qualified you are to be the communications director for the League of American Bicyclists. Thank you very much for joining me today, Carolyn.
Yeah.
Alrighty, bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, we're back in the studio. And as we say goodbye, let me just once again invite you to come by the website, cdmcyclist.com. Carolyn would love to hear from you, see your comments. I have Facebook comments loaded up on the blog. Come by and leave your 2 cents worth. I'll have links to registration for the next Women's Bicycle Summit in Washington, D.C. on March 4th. I'm already signed up, registered yesterday. March, yes, it's a ways away, but why don't you complete that registration now and you can kind of forget about it between now and then. It's going to be fun. I've been before. I look forward to going again. It is, like Carolyn says, one big schmooze fest with 800 people in the ballroom. You'll see all your friends, make a lot of new friends too. Well, that's it for tonight's show. Thanks so much for listening and good night.